is hereby called to order for the Finance Facilities and Audit Committee meeting. I think this is probably around 2:10. In pursuit of our effort to provide the management and opportunity to bring matters before the board that relate to operations wherein policy may be affected, we have convened this meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee, and wish all of you well, those of you who are here, not on vacation, somewhere else, but the business of the university has to go on, and so we are now convened and duly authorized. The first matter that comes before us is the audit findings, and as Dean just, you're here right here. I'd like to get a presentation from you with respect to the audit findings as well as any responses that you care to make.
Thank you, Trustee Finney, and good afternoon. The audit was released on May 14th by the Auditor General. The number of audit findings was 20, which is an increase of 3 over the 2007 audit. 12 were repeat findings, and there were 5 findings that were in the previous audit but were not repeated. The majority of the findings are similar to those in the 2007 audit. That's why they are repeats. We did anticipate a fair number of repeat findings compared to 2007, owing to having the same management staffing and procedures in place in that year as in the prior year. There were some new findings that I do want to talk about very briefly, and then also some of the key corrective actions that we have taken to date on some of these matters. Now, we talked about some of the corrective actions relative to the 2007 findings. So again, because so much of it's repeated, I'm not necessarily going to go over each of those unless requested. But I want to talk about some key improvements that have taken place.
Hold on, sir. Do we have a listing of all the findings here?
Yes. In code, you have the audit. John, do you have a list of? Do you have a table of the findings?
Sure, I'll give you that attachment.
Yeah, no, it's.
Is this what we're looking at? What should we look at? I believe it's
the audit code.
Is that it?
Oh, okay. There's two found
page
copies,
four.
One is financial and lawyers and clients. Here's a summary that lists all 20 of them by title.
Thank you.
Item, reference number, and title. One through 20.
Okay. Well, why don't we address it this way?
Okay.
So that's a long time. Let's follow the findings as they were presented by the office. That way we can follow. You may want to, in a minute, give some observations in terms of what improvements would add. First, we need to deal with the findings as they appear in the office.
Okay.
Is that acceptable to you?
Sure. Thank you, sir. All right. The first finding had to do with adjustments that were made to the financial statement. Our Director of Accounting Financial Reporting, John Frizzell, do you want to speak to the specific of that finding, John?
Yes, there are three financial statement findings that are three separate findings, but they are very related in subject matter. And we were using 2007 electronic files that were erroneous files that our new team, I started myself May 2008, that we were using, and that caused these three audit findings. So we now have put a process in place that we have.
And those three audit findings are?
Those would be.
I
Is it five, six, and seven?
It is, John, it was five, six, and seven.
Five, six, and seven.
08-5, 08-6, and 08-7.
But the first finding had to do with the adjustments that were made to the financial statement. That included several different items. One of them I wanted to speak to very briefly had to do with the construction in progress entries, that these had not been closed out. Some of these entry, and by the way, the total of these entries was $14 million. These accounting records that had not been closed out, some of them dated back as far as 8 years.
Yes, that is true.
And so when the new team came in and discovered the backlog of these construction and project and progress accounts, they reported it and acted on it. Sometimes.
So am I dealing with 08-1?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So this is the finding is material non-compliance, material weakness. That's what's here, right? So as, we want to make sure that we zero in on what's going on here. So at this particular point, the auditors have noted that in one area on the financial statement, adjustments had to be made because the finding was material non-compliance and material weakness in our financial statement reporting. Okay?
Yes.
All right, now that's what you're adjusting, right?
Yes, because there had to be adjustments made to close out these construction in progress accounts. So those were some of the adjustments that had to be made. Again, as I indicated, some of these records were back as far as 8 years. We unearthed the problem. Sometimes when you unearth a problem and put the light on it, you have to do that in order so that you can correct it. It is a finding, of course, and we did unearth it. In addition.
We unearthed it or the auditors unearthed it?
We unearthed that one.
Okay.
On the.
If I could just add you real quick. What we're talking about is there was $14 million in construction progress, and that's a balance sheet transaction. But we're also talking about, we're written up for $1.9 million of depreciation that we had not expensed. And some of those, as Dean had stated, were 8 years of projects that had not been depreciated or expensed on our books. So these are things that were definitely uncovered by us. We had made the entries and the auditors had found them. And we had made those to that period, and they wanted us to go back and make prior period adjustments.
So that'd be, okay, so that appeared on your trial?
Yes.
When they got there?
Yes.
The trial balance disclosure?
Yes.
John, you want to speak briefly to the $3.5 million to the CRCP? What had happened in that situation was that the release of the cash of the $3.5 million came from the state so late that it was booked into the, had to be booked into the next incorrect fiscal year.
All right, so is that 08-1?
Yes, it is, sir. Another part of it.
And what was that?
The Chicagoland Regional College Program, there is a grant of $3.5 million. What had happened in the audit year was that the state did not release that money until the books had turned for the new fiscal year.
And so that was how much?
$3.5 million?
Yes.
Did you have anything else to add to that, John?
To this finding, no, I do not.
That's a state funded. The check arrived dated July 1st, arrived in the next fiscal year. Therefore, we should have recognized on June 30th that it was a receivable from the state of Illinois to us because we've already expended the services for that program.
And where did we recognize it as instead of a receivable?
I'm sorry?
Where did we recognize it? It should have been receivable. What was it?
On June 30th. We didn't recognize it.
Oh, so it was just.
We failed to recognize.
It was an oversight?
Yes.
And recognize it? So it wasn't miscategorized?
No.
Okay. Did you catch that or what?
I have.
Yeah, the reason I'm probing these questions is when you have not only a finding, but it discloses a material weakness, then the issue is whether or not the weakness that was found or disclosed has been corrected. Or that the system that is in place discovered the problem and did the self-correction. You know, so the issue here, I think, for the auditors, when they write you up for a material weakness, it means that your financial system is weak. or it's not in effect, it's not as effectual as it ought to be. And so then the follow-up question in my mind is, who discovered it? Did we discover it? And so were the checks and balances that were in the system sufficient to disclose this on its own, or did the auditors come in and then still write us up for material weakness?
If I could just kind of, my accounting staff, we, because of the number, the 3.5 million, the amount, it's a very large grant amount that we receive. We, when we received the check, it looked like July 09 funds. So the accountants booked it July 1st, and it should have been put on a receivable fiscal year 08, June 30th, and it wasn't that.
Okay.
So it was, we saw it, the senior accountant made the decision to put it in July 1st. I agreed with her based off the data that we had. But looking into it deeper, it should have been booked as a receivable. So yes, it was an oversight. There has been controls put in place to look into these. This is a...
So what you're saying is it would have been a receivable 08. It should have been,
yes,
receivable in 08.
Yes.
And then it was finally paid in 09.
Right. And
so for this audit period, the receivable should have been reflected as a receivable still. And it was not there. And so that would have been a material weakness.
Correct.
Okay. I got it.
Because in essence, it made our books look like it was 3.5 understated for 08.
Yeah, understated 08 and overstated 09 so far. Okay, thank you.
The second finding has to do with the voluntary non-exchange transactions. So these have to do with the way that grant receivables are booked. That's not, is that correct, John? John Meehan?
Yes.
On the voluntary non-exchange?
Yes, it's a...
Who would like to speak to this? You, John, or Ken?
I can. This is, according to the GASB, and this, when we receive monies that are, for most of the time, when we get monies, we deal and get monies from the agency. Oftentimes, the agency will provide monies to us in advance. Now, according to the GASB, policy, we have to recognize those revenues as revenue. We have to recognize the advances as revenues instead of deferred revenues. So what happened in this particular finding here is that the advances were not recognized as revenue. They were recognized as deferred revenue, and that's how we get the finding. So what we're going to do about this is to make sure we identify all of those monies that we get, all of those revenues that we get in advance, and then the controller would have to book this revenue, these revenues as revenues, not as deferred.
So let me get it. So the actual transaction was you posted your books as revenue. And it should
we posted it as deferred revenue.
Okay.
It should be revenue.
Okay. All right. And why wasn't it deferred?
Well, because these are monies that we get the monies in advance of doing the job. For the most part, in most of the time, the university gets pays out and get the money. But
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let me put this on nervous. Okay, I'm sorry.
All right. For the most part, these are basically have to do with the convocation center, those big tap money. The state usually give us money in advance. And so what the law is saying is that when we get those monies, in booking them, we have to book them as revenue, not as deferred. Or in the past, in this situation, we booked them as deferred revenue, okay? Because we already get the money in advance, so that's we have to book that in as a revenue instead of deferred revenue. Deferred revenue meaning that
I got it. Mm-hmm. I just didn't follow it.
Finding three had to do with uncollateralized deposit accounts and untimely bank reconciliations. These now, during the course of 2009, these have been fixed. Now, what happened in terms of the uncollateralized deposit account, we have closed the accounting down and we have tightened up our collateralization controls on checking on all of our accounts. That's during 2009 that we're doing this. And then the bank reconciliations are all current and timely, and we are tracking it and logging it in terms of the date that each reconciliation is performed for each account for each month, and that is up to date. This was one of these things that, with the incremental staffing, we were able to take care of this and solve this during the course of 2009.
Okay, but do you agree with the finding?
For this year, yes. For the finding year, yes.
So we're not in compliance, and this is a significant issue. Okay. All right.
Unclaimed property act. This is the stale check piece, John? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. We have made some great strides. Again, this is the 2008 audit. During the course of 2009, with the new team, we've made very significant strides in this area. We have reviewed and reconciled a section of the stale check inventory. And as of December 31st, that's just the last data I got, and it's better than that, but we have made $8,700 in payments to students on old stale checks, and we have paid $72,000 to the state treasurer. Now, these numbers are higher. These are just the data as of December. Do you want to speak to the letters, John, that
were
sent out?
Well, what we've done effective April 1st is we have sent out a letter of confirmation, because these items are so old on our books, these stale items, to confirm whether the vendor would have a receivable on their books. So we have been successful in getting some of these letters back. We just sent them out, like I said, April 1st. We've been getting some back, and it's a confirmation. Most of the confirmations are that we have zero balances owed to these vendors.
Okay. So let me ask Chris this further then. So what this reflects is a weakness in accurately recording aged accounts payable on our books.
Yes.
And on the vendor's books, it's accounts receivable.
Right.
And so what you're trying to do, or what we didn't do, was reconcile our aged accounts payable against the accounts receivable that are on the books of our vendors.
Yes, that's true.
And that put us into material non-compliance.
Yes.
I mean, not material non-compliance, material weakness. Do we know, I'm just wondering why they listed this as an accurate statement of cash flow. But I guess what they're really trying to do is an inaccurate statement of on your operating statement, right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Right. I mean, it affects.
Wait a minute. This is
yes,
for the account.
Yes, this does affect the cash flow. Again, these are items on our books that we potentially owe. It's a liability on our books.
No, what I said, sir, was that the term that I would have thought would have been used was not inaccurate statement of cash flow, but inaccurate statement of operating. Inaccurate statements as it relates to operations. Cash flow is not accrual.
That's the next one, 05 is cash flow. Maybe the...
Right,
maybe the...
Yeah,
04. Oh, okay.
04 was the one we were talking about.
I'm sorry. Gotcha.
All right. Okay, because I was trying to find one.
All right. Got it. Thank you.
But that being said, you want to speak to 5.
Well, I want to go back to 4. We're working on, it's going to be one of those findings that there are so large numbers on our liabilities. We're working on it. It'll progressively get better each year, but to go away next year, I don't know if that'll happen.
How many years back do these stale records go?
These go back 9 to 10 years. So we're talking, and a lot of the snowballs from other findings, like bank reconciliations not being done, because if these reconciliations would have been happening, then these payables would have been coming off if they were simply voided checks.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't, and they accumulated, and here we are today.
Okay, so what you're representing is that this is a practice that we have failed to address for a number of years.
Absolutely.
And the accumulative effect is a continuing write-up by the auditors. So this, I suspect, is one of those findings that has been with us.
Yes.
Okay, number?
Did your trial reveal this, or was this something that came out through the audit?
Well, I knew about it from previous audits.
When you did your schedules and your trial, what I'm really trying to see now is the next step. If this was a material finding that was in years past, the question is, are we sufficiently in control?
Yes.
With respect to the checks and balances that should be in our financial record-keeping system, that this is not growing, it is zeroed out in terms of this kind of finding, and really we're trying to go back and reconcile records that were kept by somebody else.
Right. They definitely are diminishing because we've extracted these and have separated them in order to send letters out to the vendors, these confirmation letters. So therefore, when we get the...
What's the scale of this finding you anticipate now, monetarily? Do you know?
It's over 2,000.
How much?
There's over 2,000 records.
Right, well, dollar amount is...
You don't know?
I don't have the dollar amount.
Dollar amount, it's going down, but it...
If you don't have it, that's okay.
I don't, I can bring it to the next meeting.
And this is all...
It's substantial.
Yeah, this is to make sure for those who are here. This reflects the audit for the period, audit period beginning July 1.
'07.
'07.
Right.
Through June 31, '08.
Yes.
It has absolutely nothing to do with July 1, '08 through June, we haven't even arrived at June 30, '09, right?
No.
Okay.
The auditors have just arrived to start the fiscal year '09 audit, so...
Okay, the cash flow?
Do you still want me to speak to this? Because we talked about this earlier, '85, '86, '87.
Yes, well, yeah, as a group, we did speak to those three. Is there anything further?
I don't know if you had any additional questions on...
Well, yeah, all three, '05, '06, and '07, relate to what John said earlier, that the new team had used an electronic work paper that was labeled as marked as final by the prior group. It was not accurate. And the new team at the time that this was had to be done, it had not been in place long enough to hire additional staff to allow the double check system that John indicated now exists and now is in place, such that this is something that will not recur. But that really speaks to the cause and the corrective measures for 5, 6, and 7.
And this will be, these three will be gone in fiscal year 09 audit.
8, purchasing card processing errors. There are a number of these and of various kinds. In 2009, in April, I think it's April 15th, I temporarily suspended the P-Card program, collapsing the program just to three super users, the purchasing director, the facilities director, and the office of the president. That group has come together and is working on a re-engineering of the entire program. We want to relaunch this, hopefully in the fall term of this new year, with very tight controls, good training, and very good monitoring. So this is a re-engineering. Basically, we didn't cancel it totally, but we pulled the thing way back so that we could get our arms around it and go forward for the next fiscal year in the best manner. Number 9 has to do with documentation for federal program expenditures. Ken, did you want to, or John, you want to both speak to this?
These are basically payments that are made that did not have supporting documents. That's basically what that is. So I think instituting a dual check, meaning that before...
I can't hear you.
I said instituting the dual checking, whereby before a check is cut out, the controller or John Trizell will be reviewing every document before the account payable people pay. So pay the check, pay the, cut the check. It will go first to John Frizzell to make sure that all of the documentation, receipts and the like would be there before the, before a check is issued.
Okay, so what this means is we don't have a, an invoice or bill that is attached to or accompany the authorization to cut a check or write a check. And then a copy of that check should be there and attached. So you have the check that's written, you have the invoice or bill that supports the expenditure, and then the authorization to cut the check. And what you're really saying is all that documentation is not, was not in existence.
Yes.
In a number of instances.
Correct.
So, yes.
Okay.
Number 10 relates to a federal grant. Ken, did you want to speak to number 10?
Anybody? I can. This is an issue whereby the awards that are given to students in financial aid, the amount didn't match what is in the general ledger, meaning that once an award is made to the student, that award amount goes to the bursars, and that, and then the bursars then, through Mr. Frizzell's office, put that amount in the general ledger. Then we draw down that amount. So what it is that the amount that was awarded is not the same as the amount that we requested. We draw down to be paid from the U.S. Department of Education. Now, the problem is basically that, I mean, I'm not going to go into detailed problems. We have to reconcile what was awarded in financial affairs and what actually goes to the general ledger for us to draw down. We have to reconcile what was paid and how much money we're going to get from the federal government. What had happened is that the amount that was awarded is not the same, that it's not the same amount that gets into the general ledger, which allows us to draw down. So what we plan to do in this situation is to make sure that before we draw the money down from the federal government, that we're going to reconcile what we financial affairs receive from financial aid, and then making sure that that amount is the same amount that we're going to draw down. The amount that goes in the general ledger will be the same. So I think this situation will be corrected from what I can see, will be corrected this year, actually. Actually.
Who's keeping this double entry system? Are you keeping it, or are
no,
you keeping
financial affairs and financial aid.
Okay, and financial affairs is?
Myself. It'll be the bursar actually books these entries and financial aid.
Okay, do they report to you?
Yeah, financial aid does not, but bursar does.
Okay, and so what this is, I guess, is a failure to make, accurately book the cash that was received. Is that it?
Yeah, well, basically.
I need the accountant to answer.
No. There's three components to this. Financial aid awards to eligible students specifically in this program. This is a program that covers freshmen and sophomore in one program, juniors and seniors in another program. It's a relatively new program. This is the second year in operation. What we did is they awarded it in the correct criteria in the financial aid module. When a student changes their enrollment or does anything to change the eligibility of that amount, that then that's captured in the bursar student receivable record. Anytime there's changes, you have to reconcile between those two. Then it feeds over to the ledger system. So that's another opportunity to view and examine it on a detailed basis. We're only talking here, this program probably only has 150, 200 recipients. So it's not a massive program. It has unique type of criteria and eligibility. But it's definitely, there's three sets of records that all have to match, and then compare it to the drawdown. The drawdown is separate. We're accessing the website of the Department of Education, and we're telling them that we're going to draw down a flat amount. There's no system compatibility or matching. So his office does the drawdowns. That's it. They just hit the button for the amount. It'll accept anything that you submit as long as you don't accept the annual award that's in the Department of Education database. So it's three different departments, they all have to get together, it's never happened before in my 16 years here.
Meaning it's never happened before that they got together, it's never happened before that we get...
In an effective, productive, timely way to make sure that you don't have these kinds of findings. You're gonna see that same scenario in four or five other ones. So we have a new team now, we're making progress since the new accounting director came. You have to remember, we had an acting vice president of finance from January of '08 to June of '08, flew in and out from Texas, and he was the acting financial aid, finance EP for 6 months. John Frizzell comes, I help train him, Dr. Croma helps train him, others help train him. He basically entered an office that was completely empty. The database that he inherited from the previous director was contaminated. So that's pretty much where we're at with some of these. This is a small program. This can be fixed. We can assure that these 150 recipients, everything matches between now and June 30th.
Well, I think that the good thing is that we have a way of addressing the problem to keep it from growing. And I assume that we're talking about here adjusting interest that went to the books. And so the auditors, under the auditors' effort, they adjusted our books, right?
No, they make suggestions.
Yes.
If they're material,
and you took the,
there's some negotiation to that, depending on the impact to your financial statements. So.
Yeah.
But for federal programs,
I guess my point is that they had to agree.
Just for your information, the partner for the CPA firm that's under contract with the auditor general, she's in the audience, but there's a protocol process to go through the auditor general to get information and financial statements and that.
I don't see you. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. And your name is, ma'am?
Fern.
Could you just stand up so I can see you? Oh, for a second. Okay.
Okay. Fern Hilger. Okay. Ramo Hilger Riff. Hilger. Last year, under the contract with the Auditor General to perform our audit. Then it has to be bid out through the Auditor General process.
Okay. All right.
And she's taking notes.
Well, I think that the thing to note is that were these findings not in the audit report, the board would need to be involved. It is, in fact, when it gets to be in an audit report that the board has to satisfy itself that, A, the facts are what they are, and number two, the corrective and or remedial action has been taken or is in the process of taking. So that's why we're going through this detail by detail, and certainly I hope that the auditor can duly note that the board insisted on going through each item and examining the item as well as the observations and the corrective action.
Number 11, this is an error that was made by staff. There was a new promissory note that was used for Perkins Loans. They did not use the new promissory note. This has been corrected.
Yes.
And will not be repeated.
This is an audit finding of a prior year or a new one?
This is a new one. Number 12, student financial aid reconciliation.
Same thing as the...
Same as before?
Same as 10.
As 10.
Which means what?
The problem is the same as what we discussed on 10. Just what we just discussed about the 10. It's the same issue that we have with the... items coming from the awards, the financial aid awards, and the drawdowns, the brochures, and the general ledger, what we just discussed.
Okay, I just wanted you to say that.
Okay.
So we're clear. We're being transcribed here, so I want to make sure you say the same as some degree that your response is reported by the scribe. Okay? Yes.
Number 13, controls over contracting procedures. There are a number of different types of problems associated with this. We're working very aggressively on this one. You may recall in the previous meeting of the board, I had given a template where we were zeroing in, especially on one item that the auditors in their exit conference said was particularly troubling, which had to do with the fact of a contract being signed and executed after the start date for the contract. So what we've done is to pull from 2009 all of the contracts for which this problem exists, and we have written to fiscal officers and principal investigators for these ones that we've located, asked them to submit information on what they'll do to prevent this from occurring again. In addition, I want to mention the special training that is done by purchasing. Last year, or I should say the beginning of this fiscal year, 2009, not the audit year, there was an all-day training program that Nathan Tindall put on, the director of purchasing, and we had a very large attendance, with a big sign-in sheet from this, where they went through comprehensively a great number of these matters relative to controls and contracts. We still have some problems that are existing in 2009, and we, again, it is necessary for us to get everyone support in the entire university, fiscal officers, their supervisors, deans, vice presidents, everyone has to participate in the correction of this. We cannot have situations where a purchase document first arrives in the purchasing department and the goods have already been delivered.
Have already been what?
Delivered. You know, no purchase number, order had been issued. So
no purchase order.
No purchase order had been, you know, again, it's just some people have been sloppy. And some of these are identified here, this type of thing here. So we are pushing very, very aggressively on this one. I have a certification from the purchasing director to me that there have been no violations of the board requirement for board approval for bids for contracts over $250,000. I had him check that for 2009, and I've had him certify that to me in writing. So we're doing a lot of things. 2009, because again, this is a 2008 audit. So what I did.
But we are now dealing with 2008.
Yes, I know. But not having been here in 2008 and talking about the corrective actions, mm-hmm. what I'm seeking to do is to say how everything proactive that we started to do in 2009, learning from and utilizing not only the 2008 audit when it was released, but the 2007 audit.
So let me get it. So what you're really saying is you agree with the finding for 2008 and your corrective action for 2009 is in place?
In progress.
Well, in progress.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That takes us to
14. The filing of contracts with the state controller. There's a requirement that purchasing has to notify the controller of contracts at certain levels. And these contracts, these notifications were sent, and the purchasing director, there were some disconnects where the controller's department said that they did not receive a notification that the purchasing director said was sent. So what we've done in 2009 is to initiate a process by which we go back then after sending the contract, we go back and check and confirm the receipt of the contract. So we do that extra piece just to be sure that that items not only have been sent and are being traced and tracked, but then that they have been received and acknowledge that they've been received. And we believe that that is another double check process that will really serve all parties. Number 15 has to do with employee travel. and use of the university credit card. John, do you have something you want to talk about?
On number 14, I just want to reiterate what you're saying here is failure to file contract with state comptroller and non-compliance with Illinois procurement code. Mm-hmm. That's the filing of the documents, right? Mm-hmm. That does not suggest that we have failed in 2008 to bid the contract properly.
Right.
Okay. Which makes you note that we have not. We've been written up in this particular instance with failure to comply with state law as it relates to bidding contracts.
Right.
Okay. 15.
Okay, John, speak to 15.
This is employee travel and use of university credit card. Some of the internal controls that we have in financial affairs is to double check that Dr. Justman is referring to. But we've also sent out memos on different instances that have come from Dr. Justman and myself to notify fiscal officers of the drop dead date that we need this paperwork by in order to pay the vendors in a sufficient amount of time. If you see three.
So let me get it. So what we have here is a decentralized ability to encumber the assets of the corporation, right? So people can encumber the assets, order things, and have them delivered without a clearance through the financial affairs. Is that correct?
That is true.
So what's your check? What is your check and balance?
Well, this is pertaining primarily to travel.
No, but this is a general question. I understand the 15th is related to travel only. But I guess my point is that it just dawned on me as we were talking is that we have a decentralized way of doing purchasing, right? And it's decentralized. And so there are a number of places where the assets of this corporation or entity can be encumbered.
Right.
And these are fiscal officers, I guess, people who are empowered to buy things, purchase things,
and be reimbursed. And be reimbursed.
And have the central office pay, or your office cut a check and pay. And so the question that I'm raising is, so how do we maintain the integrity of the system?
Well, management, as of April 1st of 2009, has we suspended the P card, which is the credit card. April 15th. We suspended the university credit card to all users, and we've limited it to three power users. And what that does is...
And those three power users.
You did mention that?
Yeah, I did mention that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So that was probably the biggest leaker, I would say, of people purchasing things and not supplying us the details.
And you call that P-code?
P-card.
Could you repeat those power users?
Office of the President, the Director of Facilities, and the Director of Purchasing. Now, I want to mention, if I may, about travel. Just as we're watching...
Can I address this issue, Dr. Fanning?
Sure.
I think that the question you raised about decentralized, that people can go out on their own and purchase things without the approval of the purchasing department. That's really not so. People take it upon themselves to engage a company and tell them, okay, this is what we want done. But then they put the paperwork in. Every purchase that we make requires a purchase order to be issued so that we can pay that vendor. We've taken the position that if we have not issued a purchase order, then that vendor really may have contributed to the university, But the concern that we have is that some individuals take it upon themselves to go out there and commit. The only one that has the authority to sign on a purchase order has been given to me through the board, through the president of the university. So it is kind of centralized. But we have
well, that was what I thank you very much, Mr. Tindall. That was really the question I was. You've answered the question I asked.
Yes, sir.
Which then says that even though the question ultimately was how do we protect the integrity of the system, and thereby protect the assets.
Right.
And what you said is that we have a system in place to as a check or balance. as it relates to purchasing. That's in place now. However, there are people at various and sundry times for their own reason that choose to override the system.
Yes, sir.
But the system is in place.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I want to make sure that the resident auditor is here and hear that.
And also, there's been enhancements on the receiving DAC end of it with the system that reports to the director of purchasing. They now have detailed scanning and a software system to track every item that comes from the Federal Express truck, UPS truck, whatever truck pulls in there. They now have a tracking system in place that they utilize. And so we're aware of items being received that have no
purchase order
copy there waiting to give the proper authorization.
So what do? We send those items back, or get the proper documentation?
We do two things. One, we verify whether or not this may be a personal item that has come through here that we weren't aware of it. Secondly, if the item through our own paperwork we didn't get it, somebody again take it upon themselves that they needed this item, we hold it on the docket until that paperwork gets through the process. Or if we don't have any paperwork, we send it back. So those are three things that we do.
Thank you. So now we have a fine. What's the substance of audit finding 8-15 in terms of money? This is where we've got the employee travel and use of university credit cards. Now, I raise this because the press is tremendously sensitive about this.
Yes.
I've already been called about it. So.
Again, these were travel expenditures that were either sent in late to financial affairs or sent in without proper documentation. Now that we do have the double check in place, and that was in place around March of 08. In fact, while we were going through this audit, the auditors had stated to me that this, they could see, was getting better. That this finding was getting better as far as the travel and the paperwork that was supplied to financial affairs.
So what's the scale in terms of money?
Well, here it's, in my opinion, they're very small amounts. So we're talking about three of 40 expenditures totaling $8,000 testing. The tested total, $968, were submitted for payment between 98 and 119 days after the charge.
So we're dealing with $8,000 or $8,900?
$968. And then there's one of 40 expenditures tested was a payment of $101 for late payment fees.
So these are relatively small amounts.
Yes.
That did not have the appropriate documentation.
That is true.
And so we're looking at somewhere a total $1,000 plus dollars. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay.
Quickly, Mr. Brazil, it says that prudent practice is required that the voucher be paid in a timely manner. What do you call a timely manner, or has a cutoff date been put in place for these vouchers to be paid? So that if I travel yesterday, I can't come 100 days from now and put in my voucher to be reimbursed.
Well, that is on the fiscal officer to make sure that we get the paperwork in a timely fashion. Now, we've been asking.
Complete.
Yes, complete.
But there is no current.
Well, we have a cutoff. Yes, we have a cutoff. We for the, and I speak a lot on the P card, but the 10th of each month, we have the users they need to submit in their expenditures for that prior month.
So 30 days.
Yes.
Cut off.
Yes.
Yes, on travel. Your travel authorization,
yes,
and your final travel voucher should come in 30 days, no later than 30 days upon arrival back to from your travel status.
And you're comfortable with now this is a system that is solidly institutionalized in the organization?
We are putting a training program in place for fall on travel expressly, mm-hmm, because we need to also have the fiscal officers understand and participate in this fully. For example, one of the problems is they must submit the closeout documents within 30 days of the travel in order to not have a finding. Those kinds of things.
Yeah, but my point is, the question is, do we have the system in place now? And if not, then?
We have a double check system in place in financial affairs. For the documents coming into us and to be sure that people are adhering to the rules beforehand, that's what the training will do. And then also during the year, I intend to be monitoring just as we are with.
So the answer is not quite?
Not quite.
Okay.
Yes, but there will be letters going out because we will be watching the documents that don't follow the training.
And that's what I was speaking to, the letters that are going out to these fiscal officers that do, are not compliant with submitting their paperwork in, whether it's on time or complete.
816 is fixed. We are.
Time and reconciliation of agency records for comptroller monthly report.
Yes.
You were written up for non-compliance on that?
Yes, and in 2009.
Do you agree with the finding?
For the audit year, yes.
And now?
Fixed. And we, it's the same kind of thing like with the bank reconciliations, where we're logging the reconciliation, the date by month, you know, and so forth. That's under control.
17.
Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hi.
Would you like to help us with this?
17 is that, but it's on timesheets.
Well, the timesheets are not at any state institution being recorded for faculty. So every state university is receiving this funding. Faculty has, and maybe Lori, I know she's here, she might want to speak to this, but they've taken the position that they are not required to comply with this part of the act. So until it's either challenged in court or the Attorney General offers an opinion, all of us will continue to get the funding.
Yeah, but it seems to me that if the Attorney General has not overturned it, it is extant at this particular point, meaning that it is there, or else we would not continue to be found not having been in compliance.
Well, it is a part of the act.
By state, whatever, it would occur to me, the Auditor General does not have the power or prerogative to make up or write up things that they want to audit us on. They've got to follow the law. That is apparent now. And so I guess what we've chosen to do is ignore the law.
That's what our faculty has chosen to do, is ignore that part of the act.
Okay.
18, Nancy, has to do with the training. Speak to that, please.
Illinois Human Rights. There was training, and in fact, now we have sexual harassment training. We just purchased a software, so it can be done online. And so we won't have a problem again without going for a fiscal year without having to. So that's been corrected, and.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight. We have found a non-compliance with Illinois Human Rights Act.
Right.
What section?
It's 775 ILCS, which is a statute, that section, 5/2-105, which is specifically speaks to the establishment and maintaining and carrying out a continuing sexual harassment training process annually.
This section deals with sexual harassment?
Sexual harassment. And so we have now purchased a sexual harassment software that is online, like the ethics training.
Let me ask you a question. Is that section that is in place at this particular point, is this a new audit finding or is it old?
First time, I believe, when we filed this.
No, it's a second year.
I'm sorry?
Second year.
Second year?
Yes.
We will not have it in '09.
This is the second time?
Yes.
Not the first time?
Correct.
And you're representing that it's been resolved as of right now, to your knowledge?
Yes.
When was the software rolled out to the?
Software has been delivered?
We just purchased it, and so it's in the process of being put on.
Because the auditors, they stamped June 30th, and that's cut off. So even if you can't roll it out before June 30th, at least to a segment of the employee database, then.
So they didn't see it as of June 30th, right? If we had it, they didn't see it.
We didn't have it last year. I'm talking about this June 30th.
No, I'm talking about June 30th of 2018.
Eight. We only had a one-time training workshop that did not include representation from sufficient constituents from the employee database. This specific statute is cited in here. You have to maintain and carry out continuing sexual harassment program that includes, and then there's a whole bunch of components that are cited.
Can this training be rolled out for the course of the next month?
Performance. So you can't just have a one-time stagnant workshop when employees don't have, you know, equal opportunity to attend that. You have to have.
Trustee Sutton has raised a very important question. If it's here now, and the auditors know it's here now, we have a cutoff for this audit of June 30. June 1 begins Monday. And if it is not apparent that we've addressed this issue, then it could become another audit finding for
next year,
this current administration.
And so what I will do is I will demonstrate to Fern that we do have it, and that the company that we purchased it from is tweaking it so that it fits Chicago State University as an institution of higher education. It will not be rolled out before Monday because they are but I will have that conversation with Fern, and I will show her exactly what we do have as far as the software.
Okay. And maybe if you've got some training schedule that is also laid out, and some concurrence with, I think the HR person just walked in, some sort of concurrence so that it looks as though, A, we responded, and B, that we have, while it has not been totally implemented, we're well on the way, and maybe we can mitigate this finding.
Finding 819, we agree with the finding for the year of audit. This is now corrected.
What is the finding?
The inaccurate report of state property. These are the C-15 reports, which for 2009 have all been submitted in timely fashion.
And these are quarterly statements.
Yeah. And state property would be such as?
Any asset now that is $500
personal
or more.
Personal or real? Personal and or real?
A real property, yes. It's equipment. Property and equipment, yes.
So personal and
yes.
Or real. Okay.
Yes.
Real being real estate and personal.
Yes.
Being
yes.
Okay. All right. But you agree with the findings, and this is something that we've got a good system in place for.
Yes. This is corrected in 09, fiscal year 09. Yes.
Item 820.
This is a finding for noncompliance with Chicago State University law because the Board of Trustees does not have the requisite number of members.
Okay, that's what this means?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's a gubernatorial issue.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. In the meaning that the Board of Directors itself does not have the ability to appoint or renew members of the Board of Trustees. That is the sole prerogative of the governor of the state of Illinois with the advice and consent of the legislature. Okay. Item 8-1, this is dealing with.
Those are the same findings in different. Some of the findings have to be disclosed in both the financial and
so there's nothing new here?
No, that's it.
So then we the findings are now at 20.
Material
findings are 20.
Yes.
And what were they last year?
17.
So we went up 3.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
And we repeated 12.
See, this is the reason I'm so glad that you noted that the that representative for the Auditor General was here, because what I wanted to make sure was, A, we recognize the problem, but B, we had taken corrective action subsequently, so that there would be an ability to demonstrate for the audit coming forward in 2010, which would be for fiscal 09, would be materially better than in terms of reduction in the findings. And so the unfortunate thing is that if you don't go through these individual findings and be able to determine the merit of the substance of it, then the news media, all they say is 17 audit findings or 20 audit findings. And there's no way of gauging the substance of the audit finding. And there's no way to address the issue of whether or not the finding will not be a reoccurrence. And so I think that it's important, I think, for the board to do what it can to be, A, transparent when it comes to receiving an audit. And an audit is an investigation in its very nature. It is an investigation of management, by and large. That's what it is. The audit is passed. It is done on behalf of the Board of Trustees, who therefore have to take some action or ensure that actions are in foot of foot. And so in those instances, it seems to me that we have addressed, we've acknowledged the validity of the audit findings. We have taken corrective action. In instances, we have indicated that some findings will repeat again because of the simply the nature of the findings would make it difficult for us to prove up that we've corrected. And in particular, in the instance of the matter that Mr. Meehan noted a bit earlier. It's not going to go away right away. But I think that progressively, if we can show improvement and show a reduction in the findings and then be able to explain the findings in a coherent way so that the media understands them above and beyond what the board is, hopefully going forward, we will be viewed as fiscally being managed in a prudent manner that protects the assets of the corporation and protects the corporation from frivolous and capricious lawsuits that could be occasioned if our house of records are not kept in a way to inspire the confidence of the auditors. Okay? All right. Now, you want to do a summary on how you displayed this, or are you ready to stand down and let us move on?
We can move on, sir.
Well, I don't want you to think that we're not prepared to listen to you.
No,
but
thank you.
It seemed to me that it would be much more appropriate to go over each finding and make sure that everyone here and in the room understood. And now the representative from the State Auditor General also has heard what we've done. I should say this while I...